Alright, here we go. Bass and drums and guitar.
And hello, this is CITR 101.9 FM, the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. I have a couple of special guests this week. I'm doing two best of shows. Best of is kind of a weird term. One week I'm having a bunch of cartoonists on, and we're going to talk about our favorite comics of the year. And then next week I'm going to have a bunch of critics on. And, this week, though, I'm very excited. I'm excited about both weeks. I'm a little scatterbrained today. It's been a while since I've been on live on air. Seems like a dog's age. It's been, 2010's been a chaotic year for me. Right now, I have on the line... Sorry about that. Do I have you guys there? I have Zach Soto. Do I have you, Zach?
Yep.
Okay, you're live on air, Zach. Zach just called in and joined us. Uh-oh, you're a bad boy. I've got Michael DeForge.
Hello.
Hello, Michael. And last but not least, Noah Van Sciver.
Hey.
Did I get it right, Noah?
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Okay, I'm happy about that. How are you boys doing today?
I'm okay.
All right.
Pretty good.
I'm great.
Yes, you are, Zach. You are great.
Zach Soto was the guy who took me my first strip club was Zach Soto.
Oh yeah, that's true.
In Portland, yeah, that was the first time I ever gone to a strip club, and I was there with Zach Soto.
Oh, Zach,
I forgot about that.
You're
so many
I could never forget
strip club cherries. You're just blur together.
That's kind of a traditional thing to do in Portland, right?
Yeah, totally. We have allegedly we have more strip clubs per capita than, you know, anywhere. But I've been to Tampa, and that seems kind of crazy because Tampa is strip club crazy.
I'll have to take your word for it. I don't think I ever want to go to Florida. I'm not much for the heat.
There's lots of lovely things in Florida.
I'm sure there is, but it's hot.
Cultural sort of things generally, but yeah.
I don't know. I'm Canadian. We don't like the heat, or maybe we do. I don't know.
True.
Why don't we start out with everyone kind of introducing who they are and kind of what the projects are right now? We'll start with you, Zach, since you seem to be the effervescent personality.
Oh, well. Gosh. Oh, my. My name is Zach Soto. I live in Portland, Oregon. I am a cartoonist, and I also am an editor. And I am cartooning on my comic strip, The Secret Voice, to be a webcomic this year. And I've been working on Study Group 12 magazine, or anthology, or whatever you want to call it. And it is going to continue, so I'm working on that.
The fourth book just came out in October, and you've been traveling, pushing that. It's a beauty of a book.
Yes, I have been showing off the beautiful book.
The beautiful book with a million silkscreen pages. Okay, maybe six.
There are some silkscreen pages. It's all offset on the inside, and the covers are silkscreen. It's limited to 500. And yada yada yada. There's a spiel I can do it at a convention, you know. But this isn't a convention.
No.
So I'm not prepared.
Michael, what?
I'm not prepared to do my spiel.
That's okay. We'll have time. Michael, tell us about yourself and what you got going on over last year.
I live in Toronto, and I draw a comic called Lose for Koyama Press. And that's about it. Do comics. Study Group is actually, Zach, when you asked me to do something for Study Group, I think that was the first time anyone actually asked me to do a comic. Like, I didn't just bring it on someone. Yeah. Yep.
Awesome.
I have
foresight, then, I guess, because you've blown up.
You boosted my self-esteem a lot.
Aww. We're all friends here. And I should mention, Michael also won the Doug Wright Award for Best New Talent in May, which is a prestigious Canadian honor. And so we're very happy.
Thank you.
We're very proud of young Mr. Michael. Noah, how are you doing?
I'm fine, man. I'm great.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I didn't win any awards. I do a comic book called Blammo for Kilgore Books, which is a used bookstore in Denver, and they publish my comic book. And then I'm also, have you ever heard that company 2D Cloud in Minneapolis? They're a little publisher.
Oh, yeah. They do the Hive Anthology, right?
Yeah, they do The Good Minnesotan, and they put out yearbooks and a lot of good stuff, but they're going to publish this one-shot comic that I drew in the summer called The Death of Elijah Lovejoy, which is just like a historical comic. And then I'm also working on this Abraham Lincoln book that I've been working on for years. And that's it. That's all. That's the only thing I got going for me.
And you also did a extensive touring with John Porcellino last year.
Yeah. We might actually go on one in the spring, too, and do the East Coast.
Oh, nice. Nice.
We're trying to figure that out.
That would be swell. Now, in preparation for this show today, we kind of tossed around a list of a bunch of different comics, and you guys all kind of had a completely different list.
Sorry.
it was good. Like, it's nice to see what folks' interests are, and try and gather together some kind of list. So I sent back a list for us to go over and discuss. Were you guys able to get through most of the stuff on that list?
Some of it.
Yeah.
Is there anything anyone...
I, uh, Sorry, go ahead.
I'd say, is anything anyone did not read?
You know, I still haven't read Lint.
Really?
So yeah, it's I had bought it before we even talked about it. It's just been sitting on my to-read list, my to-read pile, you know, along with copies of Atari Force and The Nth Man. And, you know, I just haven't gotten to it.
The Nth Man? Isn't that the one that Steve Ditko did?
It's a denser read than, like, Weathercraft or something. You know, and I just haven't been able to make the time for it because I want to be in the right headspace for it.
I understand that. One of the reasons I wanted to get cartoonists together to talk about, you know, comics of the year is to kind of get your point of view as creators and how this work has influenced you or kind of how you view it as a cartoonist, where comics critics have a very particular point of view and have kind of a different analytical lens. Maybe we'll start out with one of the zanier books. You'll get mad. You can get mad if you want for using the term zany. Did you guys all read Wally Gropius by Mr. Tim Hensley?
I read parts of it.
Did you read it in Moam first? Like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I actually have not finished reading it. It's been Moam.
It looks really good, though. I like his style and, you know, like, feel clean. Yeah.
Michael, you read it,
though.
It's sort of cool how, like, because I didn't pick up every issue of Moam, so I'd, like, read bits and pieces of it there, and I'd, like, thought it was pretty cool, but I was surprised at how linearly it reads as a book. Because in Moam, I sort of thought there was something going on, but I was just really dumb and couldn't understand it. And then
it come off pretty scattered in Moam, I guess.
As a book all at once, I was really surprised and delighted at how it reads. Like stuff that I thought was maybe either stuff that was going over my head or stuff that adhered to some, like, logic that was completely Hensley's that I had no idea how to read, really made sense. Like, everything kind of clicks together, collected like that.
Go ahead, Zach.
No, I was just going to say, so it wasn't, like, narrative hula-hooping. It was just you weren't reading all the parts.
Yeah, or just stuff, because, like, I don't know, Moam has such a weird schedule, too, so even during stretches where I was reading it issue to issue, I wouldn't really remember what happened. I'd have sort of an idea of what was going on, but, yeah, like, it was much more rewarding reading all at once in one sitting.
Noah, what kind of stuff did you get out of the stories when you read it as Moam, or did it kind of stick out to you at all?
When I read it,
yeah,
I liked his, like, it was sort of like an old Archie comic kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was like an interesting approach to take with comics, but I guess I'm just kind of with Michael on that. I don't know.
It's a whole. It seems like he's using his own language in comic storytelling.
The thing with Tim Hensley is, like, I don't know, his stuff is always really interesting because he purposefully puts his what's going on in the comics as far as the drawing and stuff, like, at odds with the text. So that, I mean, it's like almost like forced awkwardness.
Yeah.
So it's like an intellectual, you know, type of version of, like, choose your Curb Your Enthusiasm or something, where you're like, what's going on? Why are these people all, like, aggravated, you know, or why am I getting aggravated reading this, you know?
I think I read in an interview somewhere, doesn't he, like, ink out all of his balloons first before deciding what to draw everything in? Like, that might come way after he actually letters everything, or maybe that's wrong, but I think I read in an interview that's how he worked.
That would be pretty nuts. Usually it's quite the opposite, where folks will draw their page and then kind of insert the word balloons. Is that the same for you guys?
It depends. I mean, I have it written out already.
Go ahead.
Noah?
I, Oh, yeah. I have it all written out in a notebook, and so I usually just, like, pencil it in, the drawings, and then just, like, write out the word balloons after that, but I don't know. I mean, some people put word balloons, like, on the with the computer, right? And that's how they do it. Like, the word balloons aren't even part of the artwork.
A lot more now than it used to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, like, old school mainstream people would, like, they would pencil out everything, and then somebody else would come in and do all the word balloons first before anybody had inked it, so... It's you know, whatever. There's no normal way, I guess. I don't know. But as far as like writing at the very end, it's almost like he's doing like his own. If that's true, then he's doing his own like Stan Lee, you know, Marvel method or whatever on his own art or something.
Right. Yeah.
That's
it's
just
like
hope.
Reverse Marvel or something.
Yeah.
The anti Ditko.
Oh, I don't know about that, actually.
Well, I mean the opposite of the Ditko process.
Yeah.
Where Ditko just does these crazy stories and, yeah. One comic that I really loved, and I know Zach really likes this too, and Michael, you like this as well. I don't know if you got a chance
no,
to read
it. No, I did not. I don't know what it is. What is it?
You're
like, sure, Zach and Michael would like it.
But I haven't had much of a chance to chat with you, Noah. I've seen these boys, but I only saw you in Vancouver very briefly. I'm sad about that.
Yeah. Sorry, man.
It's okay. Orcsnane by Mr. James Stoku.
Yeah.
This year is kind of interesting, and especially like Noah and Michael, both of you do pamphlet comics.
Yeah.
And... what James does and what Brandon Graham does, also more pamphlet comics, and it seems like there's a more of a resurgence now in kind of embracing that. And I think Orcsnane's an interesting example just as far as like a lot of folks that don't normally read, that wouldn't normally pick this up, picked it up because of it being Image. But it's still a fantastic, crazy comic. So what do you guys think of Orcsnane? Zach.
Go ahead.
I thought Orcsnane was pretty cool. The funny thing about Orcsnane is that it reminds me of nothing so much as like an old Aircell comic, another great Canadian publisher along the lines of Drawn and Quarterly and Koyama.
Yeah.
And
no.
No, but it reminds me of those old Aircell comics where it's like, you know, pretty much anything could happen. You've got Barry Blair drawing like, you know, little dongs on everything, and there's like crazy airbrush coloring, and it kind of captures that feel, although it's a little bit more macho than Elf Lord.
Instead of little dongs, they're big dongs.
Yeah, they're big, yeah. Drippy dongs, and they're getting chopped off. So I don't know. It's kind of a wash, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, the penis thing is pretty awesome because I remember like the first issue came out, and I was really stoked on it. And I was like, it's really funny that there's this like awesome fantasy comic, and he's drawing all these subliminal penises in it. And then like when issue two came out, I was like, oh wait, it's like this whole thing is just about dicks, and like he reveals that the whole economy revolves around lopping off dicks, and it's like, oh yeah, this is like, it's not a subliminal thing. It is like
their money is dried up penises that they chopped off, right? So
chits made from Grunch.
Yeah, from Grunch.
The neat thing I see about it is that how James is able to just go off into his own world and really not be held back at all.
Yeah, I mean he's burrowing a tunnel deep into whatever, you know, dong loving, you know, heavy metal influenced substrata is there in his mind for sure.
Yeah, like reading it kind of reminds me of the first time I read something like Morningstar or Territoid Heights, and you get to like piece together what the whole world is about as you go further into it. It's pretty exciting to see as it goes.
Noah, did you get a chance to look at Orcsnane at all?
No, they don't get that in Denver.
What? Something's wrong with Denver.
Yeah, we don't get that kind of stuff out here.
Oh.
No.
Too many dogs.
Yeah.
They have a little border police.
Not enough dongs.
That's a lot of dong. It's quite amazing. I think it's the first Image comic to really be, to have dongs in it. Am I right?
Well, yeah, besides like Spawn, you know.
Yeah, I could be mistaken, but I think that he was originally going to do this with Oni, and they were like, too many dongs. And so he just said, you know who likes dongs?
Image. Yeah.
But there's that whole dong sequence in Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, the cover.
Yeah, Dong Pilgrim wasn't enough.
Yeah.
The cover to the last issue is basically the Scott Pilgrim teabagging special, so...
Right, well, and there's that scene where they all measure each other's penises, and I guess that didn't make it.
Yeah, and Kim had the largest penis, I think, was the problem. Anyway, this show is even more in-jokey than your usual shows, Robin.
I like to think this is a classy show this week. It's really bringing the charm.
Blame James.
He'll be giggling and farting KFC farts right now, probably.
Oh man.
Noah, I want to find out something you really enjoyed. From your list, I think Wild Kingdom was one of your picks, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wild Kingdom is, I mean, that's like beautiful. Like, he has this, there's like this part in there called Fancy Pigeons, and I could stare at that like forever. He's one of my favorites.
Is that the list of pigeons?
Yeah. And the way he colored it, I don't know how he does that stuff. But yeah, he's great.
I think he uses a computer, but
yeah, that's computer.
Yeah, but it looks like it's like almost like watercolored or something. Look at that thing, man.
And oh, you know what? It could be pencil crayons.
Yeah. It's something like that, but then, of course, it gets tweaked. But it's beautiful, man. He has, like, a really good line. I love that guy.
There's something neat about that book in the way that it's very... He can tell a lot through silent actions.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those books where you can plow through real quick or you can take a lot of time with and kind of watch as everything connects and builds up.
Have you read the quotes on the back of the book?
Why don't I read out the amazing quotes? Deft, science for children. Outstanding in the sense that it stands out. Comics appraisal. The illustrations alone are worth ... looking at ... The International Journal of Comic Studies. Throughout the book runs the love and understanding often felt by humankind for the world of animals. Road Construction Lawyer Digest.
Kevin's got a dry wit.
Yes.
Kevin Huizenga.
The Wild Kingdom from Drawn and Quarterly.
Yeah.
Did any other boys read that book?
Yeah, I really loved it. It's like beautifully designed and I really like that one.
Yeah, I read that also in its original forms, in Orels, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if parts of it was in Super Monster or not, but yeah, I mean, I think I actually got the, I'm just like looking at my magazine rack, I think I've got this Or Else right here. Oh yeah, here's The Wild Kingdom, issue 4.
But I think this one...
And it, I thought, what's that?
It really expands upon what's in the actual issue of Or Else.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, and the pacing is a little different, and I don't know, yeah, it was really impressive. I actually read Wild Kingdom a couple months ago. It was like some of these books come out and like Kevin or like Jim Woodring or Chris Ware or someone, they'll put out a book that I know is going to be awesome and then I don't like read it right away for some reason. So it took me a little while to actually, like, I was standing around at the comic book store that I work at and I was like, let me read this, and it kind of put me in a quiet place for the rest of the day. So
well, how long did it take you before you read the new Acme Novelty Library? Did you read that right away when it came out?
He hasn't read it yet.
Oh, I haven't even read it yet.
Oh, wow. So you're not lying.
Yeah.
That
came out at Brooklyn or Fest?
I think it was out at SPX.
Okay, yeah. Well, one of those shows, and I'm like, oh, well, I can wait until I go back to my store and I get like 30% off or whatever. And and then it's just like, it's easier to read a J.T. Krull comic and hate it than it is to read something that you know you're going to love that's going to take, like, hours and hours. So, sometimes.
I wonder why read terrible comics? Why?
Well, I don't read J.T. Krull comics anymore, but okay. Just saying.
Ever since Speedy holding the, what's his name now?
Arsenal
holding the dead cat in the alley.
Yeah, well, the dead cat wasn't meowing. It was dead, but yeah, it was funny though. That was like hilarity. Anyway, the point is, I haven't read Lent, and sometimes don't read. Like, I didn't read Weathercraft until we started making these lists, you know. But then once I read it, I was like, why did I wait? You know, this is amazing. I love this guy.
Wilson was like that for me, where it took me a good probably 3 or 4 months before I opened it. And I'm
yeah, with Wilson, for me, it was like a lot of, like, I would just, like, read page every once in a while, you know, and then I reread it all in order. But, yeah, Dan Klaus, you know, he's always going to be, like, on the top of the list whenever you put something out.
He's the master.
List of big jerks.
Isn't he? Aren't they making a movie out of that book?
Yeah, like Alexander Payne is the director, the guy who did Sideways.
So he's going to play.
That's cool.
Is it going to be like Paul Giamatti as Wilson?
So Harvey Pekar is Wilson?
Funny. Harvey Pekar as Wilson.
I could see Paul Giamatti being Wilson. They could do that.
Paul Giamatti should just star in every like alt comics related movie.
What about Steve Buscemi? I'd like to see him again.
Like the surrogate.
You know what, man? I was watching Singles the other night, and Paul Giamatti's in that movie. That's crazy, right?
Is he like a young stud?
Is he like
lots of hair? He's still kind of like, he's got hair and everything. And
he's like for like
like 2 minutes, he's like making out with this girl in the coffee shop. And I'm like, that's Paul Giamatti. What the hell? What year did that movie come out? 93?
Something like that, yeah. Is he a member of some Seattle grunge band hanging out with Eddie Vedder?
No, he's like in a coffee shop.
That's it.
Which is like, that's pretty grungy.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a quick song break. And when we come back, maybe we'll jump into Wilson. Sound good, boys?
All right.
Okay.
Sounds like the greatest idea you've ever had.
Zach, I don't love you anymore.
Let's really get inside this one, guys.
All right. We'll be right back. Inkstud, CITR, 101.9 FM.
No more in jokes.
Okay.
Red, 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 red Monday, January 10th, come to Vancouver's Van City Theatre for Wilco, Ashes of American Flags. Relive Wilco's Olympic Vancouver show with Brendan Canty and Christopher Green's superb film. Ashes of American Flags shows a live look at the band from different venues across their 2008 U.S. tour. Frontman Jeff Tweedy and his band provide insight on their musical group and their impact on American culture.
If this show ends up being one of the greatest rock and roll concerts of all time, I'm afraid it's going to have an asterisk next to it. Because I'm on steroids.
The movie starts at 8:30 p.m. and tickets are $5 with a membership. For more information and tickets, go to www.vif.org/theater.
And we're back, Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM. How are you boys doing?
Great.
Great.
Oh, can we go back to the commercials?
I gotta do these things. It's radio. Sorry.
No, I know. It's funny because you don't hear those on the Inkstud.org or whatever.
Yeah,
I heard a couple. I noticed that you must hate your
other shows.
The shows that appear on the website are versions specifically for the website that don't necessarily have the I take out the ads. I take out the ads when I post them online. It gets syndicated on other stations across Canada. So there we go. Do I really need to explain myself? Why am I explaining myself? I'm joined by Zach Soto, Michael DeForge, and Noah Van Skyver. And that song we listened to was Zach's pick. Tell us about that song, Zach. You like it?
It's a band called Sleigh Bells, and I think they're a two-person band, and the girl is really hot. And so I thought, hey, man, 2010 was a really hot year, and we're doing the hot list, yo. So, no, actually, I don't know, whatever, I like that song. And it's kind of new, so I figured it would be in the cool list. Show.
That's good because my music taste is incredibly dated.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm sure Noah has some comments on that. So, Wilson, this year, big year, new book by Mr. Daniel Clowes, one of my favorite cartoonists, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this room. Actually, I'm alone in the studio, but what do you guys think of Wilson? Yeah. Was it all you expected, or were you disappointed?
Why am I? I'm always the only person that speaks up, man. I'm like waiting, and then nobody, you know. So it's like this weird.
I just felt like I was talking too much, so I thought I'd let somebody else go.
I mean, it's great. It's, you know, it's Daniel Clowes. You know, so, like I said, he can't really do any wrong. It's like Chris Ware, you know. Everything they do is going to be good.
What do you guys think?
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's his best. The best Dan Klaus book, but it's, you know, if you're a Klaus fan, you're probably going to like it.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of the fragmented storytelling that Klaus and Ware are using, where it's all done in short segments that all kind of connect together?
I don't like it.
Go ahead, Michael.
The scope of, because like Lynn kind of does that too, in that it's like a cutaway of different time, like different points of this other person's life, and it's also like page by page, and I sort of like it's an effective way to cover the scope of both narratives, which like Lint is from birth till death, and Wilson isn't that huge, but it's still like a number of years of a person's life, and yeah, it's sort of
phases.
Effective
Zach?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I just said I interjected the word phases. It was a highlight of the conversation. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh no, I think it works really well, and I think it. I mean, this is more about Lint than it is Wilson, but Lint sort of does this thing and where you think you know what the narrative is, and then it kind of tricks you at the very end and makes you question whether or not you got all the important moments through it. Yeah, so it works really well. Yeah, and for Wilson, too, I thought it was a nice way of telling a story, and I like the way Klaus wrote it out. I think he did it just like he was doing a bunch of one-page strips that weren't supposed to connect to together, I think, was the story, and then he sort of realized there was an actual narrative going on or decided to put that in there, so, yeah.
One of the interesting things about Wilson is the art style. When you look at something where someone's really making a conscientious effort to change up their cartooning, what do you think about that within your own work?
I mean, for me, it's something I do a lot. So it's something I like seeing. I was sort of curious with that. Is that, I mean, it never looked like he was trying to imitate another style. He was always just referencing other points, which I thought was pretty effective. It was probably more effective than if he tried to actually do, like, this is his Peanut strip and this is his, like, Beetle Bailey. So,
well, he did that more with Death Ray and Icehaven, like the blue, you know, the blue bunny or whatever it was, and you know, he would in some of those strips, like, because he's been doing this kind of like strips within strips, making up a larger narrative thing for like a few different stories. So this is kind of like he's refined it almost to the point where he's not trying to like pinpoint some specific cartoonist style so much as he's like, well, this is a part where I'm highlighting how uncomfortable Wilson's life is or whatever, so I'm going to draw it in really like more of a detailed style. But I actually didn't think, like, I mean, I know that he is obviously changing his styles up in Wilson, but it really didn't seem that that crazy, like, of changes in between strips to me. You know, like, one might be more cartoony than the other, but they all kind of felt like they, you know, they easily sat next to each other to me.
Right, they all had the same rhythm to it, which, yeah, wouldn't have been there if, yeah, suddenly it started looking like a crazy cat layout or something.
Yeah, and the coloring was all pretty much, you know, there was a lot more similarities in this one than, say, Icehaven, where every story is, like, a whole other character's point of view, so it made more sense for it to be radically different.
Noah, any other Wilson comments?
I think they said it beautifully.
Okay.
I agree.
The cop-out answer.
It reminds me a bit
of
with Wally Gropius. It's not like supposed to be like a parody of a teen comic, and it's not even supposed to be like imitating one comic in particular. It's sort of referencing this other style, and that's kind of what I feel Klaus did too. Or to use another book on the list, Lemon Styles by David King.
That's a great book.
Of these other cartoonists or another tradition of cartooning, but not feel like, oh, this is some guy riffing on this, or this is some guy parodying this.
This guy's trying to be Mr. Gross or something like that, yeah.
Well, why don't we yak about Mr. King's Lemon Styles?
I love that comic. It's great. I've never seen anything from... I mean, I've heard of David King before that, and then he gave me a copy of that, and I just, like... I mean, he's so, his style is, like, so clean, so nice.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah, he's an amazing draftsman, and like his I don't know, I guess stories are like really they're I don't know, they kind of go over my head half the time, you know, in a good way, where I'm like, okay, cool, you know, like,
well, like with,
I have to kind of meditate on some of them.
It's kind of interesting, like with Wilson, where you have a story connecting through, or a Lint with a story connecting to it. I feel with Lemon Styles, it's more of an emotion that's connected through it, but not necessarily a story.
Yeah, it feels closer to poetry. Like,
Yeah.
It happens to have this restriction of it casting these certain characters and having, you know, four panels, like, to look like a four-panel gag.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating now. Do you think the work that someone like David King's doing comes across better now because there's more of a wider understanding of kind of where this fits in within a historical narrative? Or is that too much of a question?
It's too much for me.
Wait, sorry, could you...
When you look at David's work in Lemon Styles and kind of see how he's influenced by older cartoonists, same with, like, Klaus, with some of the styles he's taking on in Wilson, with now there's a lot more of an understanding of what the history of comics is with all these different reprint collections, the internet making everything accessible. Do you think that affects how you're understanding the work, how you're reading the work, having that idea of history?
Probably.
You can't
help but have it change the way you look at things, you know?
Do you think this work would have come across as well 10 years ago?
Yes, I do.
Well, okay. I mean, if he was still doing the same work 10 years ago, his cartooning would still be as good. But, you know, we wouldn't have quite as much of an understanding of where he's coming from, because 10 years ago, you know, the reprint landscape was a lot different. And, you know, a lot of what you had to go off of was, like, this based on the Smithsonian Book of Comic Strips or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Have crazy reprints of all kinds of old stuff. So, I mean, maybe more people could, I mean, like, you know, not us necessarily, because we're all pretty knowledgeable about this stuff, I would imagine. But, like,
nerds.
You know, the layman would probably, the layman would probably definitely have a different take on it, like, whoa, where's this guy, what's this guy drawing from, you know?
But I don't know if Lemon Styles in particular would be one that, like, 10 years ago, people still understand, like, the format of a four-panel gag.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like, I don't think that's necessarily one that would have been harder to penetrate 10 or 15 years ago.
That's true.
Like, I feel like Wilson might even actually would have been a harder thing to look at 10 years ago for someone who didn't have just, like, a base understanding of different comic styles or hadn't read more comics and wouldn't be, like, weirded out by the fact that it's drawn in different styles. They maybe would come with a preconceived notion of how a comic book should look. But I feel like Lemon Styles, that framework is already there, even if you might not pick up on, like, every influence he has.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might not know where it's from, but you've seen old-timey cartooning, even in, like, incidental promotional materials for, you know, products and stuff.
Toothpaste.
So. Right, and just that basic grid is familiar, that rhythm to everything.
Yeah.
I realize we've been talking about books by dudes, and I want to talk about the complete opposite, Make Me a Woman by Vanessa Davis.
Oh, girl comics?
Girl comics. Millie the Model.
I love that book. I love Vanessa's comics. She's kind of amazing, actually, yeah.
I'll agree with that.
I was late to pick that up. I picked that up because it was on the list, and it was something I'd been meaning to get to, but now that I read it, I'm really glad. It's fantastic.
Noah, did you get a chance to read it?
Oh, yeah. I actually, I really like Spaniel Rage a lot, and I feel like I waited a long time for that book to come out. And so then my girlfriend pre-ordered it, and when she got it, like, I read it before she had a chance to. I like Vanessa Davis' style a lot because, like, I can't tell, like, what she's influenced by, you know? Like, she doesn't even use panels or anything, and, like, her drawing style doesn't really look like anything else to me. No guy could have drawn that stuff. It's, like, it's so feminine. I don't know. It's beautiful.
Well, it's funny because we talk about, you know, Lemon Styles, Wilson, Acme, where they're very controlled books. And Vanessa's work is not controlled. It's very free and open, and it plays, and it allows itself to really be out there.
Yeah. And
just, I don't know, it's just, it's gorgeous. And, like, even, like, sometimes you'll see, like, a mistake, like, you'll see, like, a pencil line in there or something, and it doesn't even matter. It's just, it doesn't take anything away. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, I sort of like it. A lot of comics I read are clearly done by people who, like, I mean, I feel like my comics are this, is just that, like, yeah, all I do is think about comics and think about other cartoonists. And I like reading something like that where her pages don't feel like they're, yeah, like they feel like they're designed really naturally and organically, and your eyes move around the page that way, and she's not thinking about Trevor Von Eden or something.
Yeah, but I also feel like, I mean, I know her, but I don't know anything about her process, so, like, I could be totally wrong with this, but it feels like she labors on the writing, you know, like the maybe the structure of the writing and, you know, the way the words flow and stuff like that seems very composed, you know? In contrast to maybe, you know, what you're talking about with, like, the layouts where they seem sort of free and easy, especially with the watercolor, you know, pieces that she did for that website that are in Make Me a Woman.
Mm-hmm. The tablet.
She had to distill it down to a few pages, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's a pretty book, and it was one of my favorites of the year. It's one I'd been waiting for a long time, and it's interesting how it reads different in a book, too. Like you're saying, it was on the website for tablet, and when you read it in the book, I'm able to really take it in a lot more.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought on just the web versus print and how here's something where I would say 50%, at least 50% of that book was probably is available online for free, but still people would rather read this book or are, you know, happily reading this book as a book format.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another one now is people are happy to pay for a collection at this point, you know, if they like it enough, they want to own it.
It's like a Body World, which is another one that I think that came out this year, right?
Yeah, it did, actually.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, would you rather read that in print, or would you rather just, like, read it on his website, you know? Like,
Weird one, because I would actually rather read that one on the website.
Yeah, that's one of the few for me where I feel like I enjoyed it in book form, but I thought it flowed better online.
Is that just because of the way he designed it?
I'm gonna agree with that. The book, I mean, it's a great book, but it is a challenge to read the way you have to hold the book, folded over, bent over, and flipping through the pages.
And there's some sequences that feel like it was more natural to just keep scrolling down than to actually physically flip something, which isn't usually the case. But, I also really liked it serialized, too, but that might just be my personal preference. But I kind of I enjoyed, like, waiting for a new segment and being really stoked when a new chapter was online.
How long did it take him to do a chapter when he was putting them online? Would it take him a long time?
There was something up every week, right?
Yeah, I think for a while it was weekly, but it felt like every month I'd be able to read some more.
I think the book overall, I think the serialization online was over a year and a half, around a year and a half, I think. So it might have been
for whatever reason the book seems just like more awkward.
Yeah.
And
is that because they had the pages that are like stuck together? You see that? They just like Body World like screened on the side, so the pages are like kind of stuck together. And you got to peel them apart.
Oh really? I thought
you meant because it was totally hot and sexy and you stuck the pages together.
No, that's Dash. You know, there were more pictures of Dash.
Yeah.
That guy.
Like, Dash Shaw's Pure Sexuality, the book.
You just have the author's photo.
Somebody should make that book.
Hi, Dash.
I just want, like, a Dash Shaw's nipples a comic. I wonder what he's doing right now.
He's tweaking his nipples. He's probably working on his animation thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. It does look amazing.
the thing about that is that, like, Body World on the web was one of my very favorite comics of I don't know, whatever, 2009 or whatever, whenever it was mainly serialized. And then when it came out as a book, I, you know, it wasn't on my list. I kind of forgot about it, you know, like, because, like, it was kind of an awkward book, and I was like, cool, I'm glad this is in a book, because that was a great story, but then I didn't really want to read it in a book.
Yeah, it's good. I also can't tell, like, if I would have preferred, like, I preferred reading it on the web, because that was the first time I read it, and I picked up the book, and it was really gorgeous, but I wasn't, like, because I had already read all the material, I might have read it differently if it was my first time around. I might have been as excited.
Okay. Moving on from Dash's nipples. The one manga that made it on our collective list, Tatsumi's Black Blizzard, which was an interesting kind of collection of his work, felt a lot different than the rest of his work. What kind of stuff did you guys get from that book? Zach? Or did you even read it?
Well, I actually didn't read that. So. I was like, screw that. No, that was one of the things. I actually went to go read it the other day, or to grab it from my store, and we were sold out, so I couldn't do it. So.
Oh, I guess that's okay.
But when it came out, I was like, oh, this is cool. but where are the trash bins, right? You know, so
where are the what?
Where are the trash handlers and the geishas? You know, the aborted fetuses in the dumpster.
I kind of feel weird about the book too, because I felt like, I don't know, I like more of his shocking work. I like the book, but I didn't like it as much as the Pushman or any of the other books.
Well, yeah, I think it reads more like it's more interesting if you already know his other work and know a bit of his biography. I really enjoyed it, but I don't think I'd have appreciated as much if I didn't sort of know this was his first work and what he evolved into. And like, he drew that in like a month or something, right? Like,
what?
He drew it in a crazy amount of time.
And as I was reading it, I kept thinking, I can't believe this guy like drew this in a month.
But it's weird because, like, the work itself, like, I mean, I flipped through it and I was like, okay, cool, I'll read this eventually. But, like, the work itself doesn't look like it holds up with other things. With his other work, I guess. I don't know if would we be talking about it if it wasn't, like, all the context that we have.
I don't think so.
Of knowing, like, Tatsumi's a great artist and, I don't know. I'm, like, flipping off Teddy Burns
like,
right now.
It's more interesting because, yeah, like, you know what he did later, and you know the circumstances where he made that one in particular, so. Not that it isn't really cool, because I still dug it.
We're nearing the end of our hour, gentlemen.
Oh, man, we didn't even talk about King City or BPRD?
I'm sorry.
Or Nurse Nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the whole crapload of awesome stuff that we did not even brush on Nurse Nurse.
Oh, we didn't talk about Love and Rockets.
Browntown, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Robin, do you want to just talk about our lists?
Do you guys want to go...
To let people know that we cared about more than three books?
Sure, we can do that. Do you guys have your list with you, or do you want me to read them off for you?
I don't have mine with you, or with me.
Who has theirs?
I don't, Michael.
None of you do you? Zach?
I'm by a computer. I can pick up my list.
I got the list here. Zach chose Lose Number 2 by Michael DeForge. Hi, Michael.
Zach.
Vagabond.
Yeah, that dude's awesome.
It is the year of DeForge. Vagabond 8-9, Peepoo 2. Crickets, that would probably be Crickets number 3 that just came out last month. Orcstain, which we
got. That was also amazing.
The Crickets, I mean, that was just like Sammy going, hey, I'm still here. Eat it, suckas. I loved it. Orcstain, the Browntown story from the latest Love and Rockets. Wilson, Big Questions 14 and 15. You actually finished reading it. I know a lot of folks are like, I'm going to wait. What did you think?
So they can read all 800 pages?
Yeah, pretty much.
I've been getting it since it was a mini comic. Like, I had the first few, so.
Well, you're just better than us.
Why not finish it? No, I'm just saying, why would you wait, you know?
I hear ya. I love it. I do need to finish it. King City by Brandon Graham, Unsinkable Walker Bean by Aaron Rainier, Johnny Ryan's horror comics that have been on Vice Mag. Would you include Prison Pit in that or no?
I really like Prison Pit a lot. I kind of like Prison Pit 1 better than I like 2, but it's I think for me, like, the things that Johnny's been doing aside from Prison Pit are just as kind of mind-blowing to me. Like, the comics where, like, a kid will come home and find his dad fucking some monster or something, and, you know, whatever. Anyway, yeah, his stuff is great.
As well, you, BPRD is one of your favorite titles completely right now, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
BPRD is, like, the best thing that comes out on a monthly basis.
It's pretty fantastic. Michael's list, I'm going to be pounding through these. Wally Gropius, which we mentioned. Gaylord Phoenix by Eddie Fake. Edie?
I haven't
seen the book. Bill wants to discuss it next week. I should look at it. Acme 20, Crickets 3, Sammy Harcum. I Want You, number 2, by the wonderful Lisa Hanawalt. Nurse Nurse by Katie Skelly. Orc Stain by James Stoku. Lemon Styles by David King. Wilson by Daniel Klaus. Dungeon Quest by Joe Daly. An additional 5. King City by Brandon Graham. Natural World by Damian J. Aphrodisiac by Jim Rugg and Brian Maruka. Black Color by Noel Freebert. Palookaville by Seth. And 3 translated works. The Zamim Sisters by Aristophan. Red Snow by Susumu Katsumata. What? Am I pronouncing
things
bad?
I'm just laughing at this list. It's awesome.
The Wrong Place by Breck Devins, which I really loved. That was an incredible book. Special Exit, Noah, your list. Special Exit by Joyce Farmer, a book I really need to read. Wild Kingdom by Kevin Huizenga. The Dennis Kitchen Oddly Compelling Art of. Make Me a Woman by Vanessa Davis. Black Blizzard by Tatsumi. You Can't Be Here by Nicholas Brutzman. Wilson by Dan Klaus. The Horror. That was the one out from Abrams, was it? Yeah. Blind Spot by Joseph Remnant. And last but not least, Sausage Hand by Andrew Smith.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. And you boys all have new stuff this year? Do you want to quickly shout out things you got going on? Starting with...
I have a new Blamo coming out. Blamo 7 coming out.
It looks great. Why don't you have the Joseph Smith story in it?
What's that?
Why don't you have the Joseph Smith story in it?
I probably will. I think I'm going to do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Michael, what do you got coming out?
Okay.
I have a new Luz, and it'll be out by TCAF, hopefully. And I'm co-editing a porn zine with Ryan Sands, which should hopefully also be out for TCAF.
The last scene you guys did together was awesome, and so I'm sure this one will be awesome too, the Lady Gaga one. Zach?
Thank you.
What do you got going on?
Zach is going to be working on his comic, The Secret Voice, and The Secret Voice is going to be a webcomic, and it's going to be a webcomic on my website, and on my website there are going to be a bunch of other awesome people doing webcomics, like Michael DeForge and Errol. Dalrymple, and allegedly Kaz Strzpizdyk, and like 5 or 6 really awesome people. So
excellent.
In the next few months.
Well, I chose
and
you all.
Other stuff later.
I'm looking forward to it. I chose you all because I love all your works, and I think you're all swell guys. So please keep making great comics.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
Thanks. Next week, I will be joined by Chris Butcher, Bill Cartolopoulos, and Tucker Stone. Thank you, Michael DeForge, Noah Venskiver, and Zach Soto for joining in for our little chit-chat session. And I will see you all next week.